Listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM, your station for progressive information.
I have two hands, they work just like yours. My nose point in both directions. I have two legs, just as long as yours. They reach from my hip to the floor. I have one heart, it works much like yours. It cries for both joy and I have a one soul, it longs like yours tonight on heaven's door. I'm surprised at how anatomy's body and mind are supposed to be the symphonies of great time that fine. But instead it seems that some of us are being maligned, even behind the bigotry.
Greetings. Opinions expressed on WRFG do not necessarily represent the opinions of Radio Free Georgia Broadcasting Foundation, Inc., staff, or volunteers.
You are listening to Alternative Perspectives, the voice of the GLBTQ community and our allies. Alternative Perspectives is produced by Betty Couvetier and contributions by Henri Holmes, Lakara Foster, and Dion Bates. Lakara Foster, Millicent Goodwin, and Brent Starr. Alternative Perspectives is about the lives of the GLBTQ community and the issues that affect us, social, economic, religious, and political, and finding our common humanity that connects us all.
Alrighty. Thank you, Andre. Tonight on Alternative Perspectives, what is at the movies, on TV, Noah's Ark, Breakfast with Scott, Tea Talk with Reed, and Pride and Politics with Andre. What is a man? We have a fast-paced show for you, and we're going to start right out with the Sovo News. Diana, you there?
Hello, yes I am.
Hello, and how are you tonight?
I'm great, how are you?
Good. What you got for us?
All righty, here are some headlines from Southern Voice newspaper. Tim Riley can make history on November 4th, but that hasn't been the focus of his campaign. A candidate for the District 47 seat in the Georgia Senate, Riley has been quietly running as an openly gay man and said it hasn't been an issue in his largely rural district. Senate District 47 includes half of Athens-Clark County and large swaths of the surrounding countryside, including the small towns of Jackson and Madison. If successful, Riley would become Georgia's first openly gay state senator and the first openly gay man in the state legislature. State Representative Carla Drenner, a Democrat from Ambedella Estates, is Georgia's first and currently only openly gay state lawmaker and is unopposed in her bid for a fifth term. A Democrat, Riley has gone on the offensive against incumbent Senator Ralph T. Hudgens, a Republican from Hull, attacking him for his votes on reducing peach care and blaming Hudgens for the state's budget crisis. Hudgens also supported the state constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Riley has been endorsed by Georgia Equality and the Gay Atlanta Stonewall Democrats. Three state lawmakers have asked a federal judge to dismiss a discrimination lawsuit filed against them by a former employee who alleges she was fired after announcing her gender transition. Vandiver Elizabeth Glenn claimed she was fired from her job as a legislative editor last year because of her transition from male to female. A lawsuit filed this summer named Speaker of the House Glenn Richardson, a Republican from Hiram, Senate President Pro Tem Eric Johnson, a Republican from Savannah, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle, lawyers Sewell Brumby and Robin Underwood, the state's legislative financial officer. Cole Thaler, the transgender rights attorney for Lambda Legal, which is representing Glenn, said he is aware of the motion to dismiss but had not reviewed the motion with enough detail to comment. The motion, filed by the lawmaker's attorney on October 16th, contested Glenn's ability to sue and said she did not state a claim upon which relief can be granted. Glenn's suit, filed in U.S. District Court, claims the state violated the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution guaranteeing equal protection, in part because firing Glenn disregarded her need to undergo gender transition as part of necessary treatment. In October 2006, a year after Glenn began working for the state, she said she informed her supervisor that she was transsexual and wished to transition from male to female. Glenn was diagnosed with gender identity disorder, a medical condition in which people do not identify with their biological bodies. Through the following year, Glenn updated her boss on her progress while she continued to come to work dressed as a male. She lived as a female outside work. On October 16, 2007, Glenn was fired after state officials learned she was transitioning. When she asked why she was being terminated, she was told it would make other employees uncomfortable and that lawmakers would find it, quote, immoral. Only 8 of 21 judicial candidates who sought the backing of Georgia Equality were successful when the gay political group announced its endorsements last week. Among the races Georgia Equality hopes to influence are the re-election of DeKalb County Superior Court Judge, who granted the county's first known joint gay adoption, and an Oakley Judicial Circuit Superior Court Judge who denied a lesbian's request to adopt a child she had been raising for months. DeKalb County Superior Court Judge Linda Hunter allowed Rob and Clay Calhoun to jointly adopt their two children, Rainey and Jimmy, without the cumbersome process of having one father adopt first, followed by the other through second parent adoption. The Calhoun's testimonial is featured on Hunter's campaign website. Superior Court Judge John Lee Parrott of the Okmulgee Judicial Circuit refused to allow Elizabeth Hadaway to adopt the young girl she had been raising at the request of the girl's mother when he learned that Hadaway is a lesbian. Parrott ordered Hadaway to return the child to her birth mother, who insisted that the girl remain with Hadaway. Parrott then ordered the child into foster care and charged Hadaway with contempt of court. Georgia Equality has endorsed John Neble, who is running against Parrott. Georgia Equality's judicial endorsements also include 4 other Superior Court races, 1 state court race, and 1 candidate for the Georgia Court of Appeals. Superior Court judges wield significant influence with gay and transgender Georgians, ruling on gender changes and adoption requests, among other issues. For a complete list of judicial endorsements by Georgia Equality, visit www.sovo.com. And you can find out more about these stories as well as many others on our website at www.sovo.com. Those are the headlines.
All right. Thank you, Diana. See
thank
you next
you.
Week.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All righty. And we're going to go into a recording of an interview that was done last month by Andre and Dion. Andre, could you give me a little bit of lead-in into the interview? Just a short.
Well, basically, Noah's Ark opens in theaters this Friday, October 24th, and everyone wants to know what happens with our favorite characters, Wade and Noah and the crew. So what we did is we got a chance to talk with Patrick Ian Polk, the movie's producer, along with Wade, the lead actor, and Noah, Daryl Stevens.
All right. Sounds good. All righty. So we're going to go right into that. Here it goes.
All right. We're here. I'm Andre Holmes reporting live on location in Atlanta.
And I'm Dion Bates reporting RFG's office.
And we're with the gang of Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
We've got a movie coming out, fellas.
Yes,
we do, indeed.
So, this is your baby, Patrick. And well, before we get started, the people joining us are Patrick Ian Pope, the creator and executive producer of the project. We also have one of the leads, two of the leads. We have Daryl Stevens, who plays Noah.
Hello.
And Jensen Atwood, who plays Wade.
Yep.
So as I was mentioning before, Patrick, this is your baby, your project. What does it feel like that the movie is actually now out and coming out?
It's pretty incredible. I mean, to go from a television series to a feature film in theaters, I mean, I never really imagined that this is where the show would go. So it's pretty exciting to finally have it. You know, a lot of time and energy goes into these things. We've been working on the movie for over a year now. And so finally to have it at the point where it's going to come out of the theaters is very, very exciting.
When you first started this journey, what was your vision for the project? And how far has the vision superseded?
Well, I don't necessarily talk about the real vision very much. I haven't talked about it very much. You know, I always used to say, oh, it was just a little internet series I was starting, you know, and I was going to try to get it out on DVD and other stuff. But in the back of my mind, I kind of always knew that it would have a sort of bigger life than that. I just didn't talk about it. I don't know that I thought it would become a feature film necessarily, but I certainly did in my heart believe that it would be a television series. I just wanted an opportunity to explore the lives of these characters as much as possible, you know, and I wish the series had continued longer, but I'm very excited to be doing a film. Very, very excited.
Since you brought that up, that you wish that the series would have ran longer, why did they kind of pull the plug on the show?
That's a good question, and we're not completely sure. Logo has tried to explain it to us. I don't completely know. I think it, you know, by all accounts, it was their most popular series. But they are a newer network, a smaller network. Their budgets aren't as big, and that may have something to do with it, with, I think, the need to try to spread their resources around and do different types of shows.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they did also commit to doing the movie. So it's difficult to be too upset with them or to look at them too harshly because, you know, without them, there, you know, the show wouldn't be where it is. And they did, you know, we were their first scripted series when they began. And so
no matter what, like what you're saying, the project has broke ground. And speaking of breaking ground, Daryl Stevens, who plays Noah, you play a character who is openly gay, of course, a screenwriter kind of finding his way and balancing friends and love and the career. Did you ever anticipate when you were asked to play or you won the role that you were going to be a part of history, and what did that feel like?
You know, honestly, when I found out I booked the show, I booked the role of Dwayne, who was a store clerk, had never read anything about the character Noah, had no idea what he was about. And got a call from Patrick a few days later saying that he'd changed some things around and that I would be playing Noah, and that he was changing the show from the tentatively titled Hot Chocolate to Noah's Ark. And I said, okay, so it's called Noah's Ark and I'm Noah. That's great. Well, who the hell is Noah? And what does he do? So, no, I had no expectations. I had no idea that the show would become what it is today or that people would respond so well to it. But it's been amazing, an amazing journey.
Now, I can imagine that when see you guys out and about, they see you, they recognize you, they're very much familiar with the show. And so I think a lot of times fans have a difficult time separating one's character from the true person. How much of yourselves, and this is for both you, and how much of yourselves have you go into the character, and how much do you kind of have to alter who you are to fit that character?
Well, any character that I play, there's a piece of me in the character that I'm, and so things that I am familiar with, you know, like relation, loves and losses of love, you know, I try to rely on those, quite understand some, have Patrick as a direct own environment, you know, open my eyes to. And
yeah, it's hard to really extract how much to separate yourself from the character so much. I mean, definitely there are things that I personally was conscious of putting on for the character. The wardrobe for my character helped a lot, because, you know, even though I think Noah carries himself in a way where the clothes, he wears the clothes like he's not even thinking about it, but just having to kind of get into that frame of mind where I'm wearing a white leather corset and pigtails in the middle of a playground in the middle of the day, you know, to be that kind of a guy takes a certain level of confidence, and I feel like that really helped me just have a sense that I knew who Noah was. Otherwise, you know, his sensitivity. I think I'm sensitive in ways that Noah's sensitive. Probably not quite as sensitive as Noah. I think I have a lot more walls up than he does. He's kind of a raw, emotional man. I've been in Hollywood for a while, so I know to hide a lot of that. But, yeah, it's hard to figure. It's really hard from my perspective to say what's me and what's not. I see things when I'm watching it where I go, oh, that's something I do all the time, and facial expression. But
you talk about, you just hit on the fashion aspect of the character of Noah. Who dresses Noah? Is that you bringing that?
No.
Patrick.
Can I get their business card?
Patrick had the idea that he wanted the character to be very flamboyant.
Mm-hmm.
In the first season, we relied on the talents of Dwayne Curry, who's a stylist in Los Angeles, and that really, I think, shapes who the look of the character throughout. I think that.
Yeah, I mean, I when I created the show, I felt like we were in the midst of a bit of a backlash against sort of even within the gay community against all things that were sort of openly and obviously gay. It mm-hmm. seemed like we as a community were suddenly valuing more of an assimilated identity. So the guys who, you know, more of a masculine identity where you can't really tell unless the person says they're gay, that they're gay. And I think those were the kind of characters I think we were seeing more of on television. These characters that just, you know,
6 feet under, like
Six Feet Under, the guy on Spin City, mm-hmm. you know, that's, we were seeing a lot of that suddenly. And I think that was Hollywood's attempt to be progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, we're going to have just regular guys who just happen to be gay. Well,
but it was a step in the right direction.
It was a step in the right direction, but it kind of went too far.
Well, I was going to say, the thing about Jensen and the character you play, I think a lot of fans have kind of affirmed the fact that having your representation on the show
mm-hmm.
really helps to provide another image of what we, how we view masculinity and how we view gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about kind of being a pioneer, so to speak, as it relates to black gay men?
I think the character of Wade, he has been titled as more masculine, also a different side of Wade as well. But you know, gay isn't just one color. You know, it's a spectrum of the rainbow, and so you get to see another side that maybe isn't so effeminate.
Okay.
So I want to add to that too.
Okay.
I always take issue because people, again, it's that same idea. I'm trying to foster an environment where everybody can be just comfortable being whoever they are. That's why it was important for Noah to push the boundaries of fashion, because that's also a fun part of our community. And at the same time, people always refer to, and I hate this so much, Wade as the straight one. And I tell people, watch the show. After episode one, Wade is no longer straight. But he accepts himself. He's dating Noah by episode two.
But
he's
I think one of the really great things, and we saw the viewing of the film, one of the really great things that the film did for me, it showed the evolution of all of the characters, particularly Wade.
Right.
Wade comes, and it's so obvious, he comes full circle. And I sat there and I looked at all of the characters and I thought back to season one and I thought to season two. They all come full, there's an evolution of the characters, and I think that that is one of the beauties about what you've done with this film.
Thank you. Yeah, it was important to, I mean, what I love about television, and especially shows where you really get involved and engrossed in characters, is how you have an opportunity to show people going from A to Z,
mm-hmm.
and everything in between. And it's great, like Jensen just said, you know, it's looking at Wade from episode one and looking at Wade in the movie, even his style is a little bit more comfortable. It's not necessarily flamboyant, but it's just, you know, I've taken off I'm not wearing the uniform that a lot of guys are wearing now. You know, a lot of guys put on the drag as a uniform, just like the thug gear, the oversized jeans and the wife beaters and that thing. That's a uniform as much as the dressing heels and the makeup and the wig. So it's all uniform, and just whatever uniform you choose to wear it comfortably, wear it with pride, and be okay who you are. It's not about glamorizing. I've never found anything glamorous or exciting or appealing about
closeted DL lifestyles, you know, and I'm trying to show the alternative to that.
One of the things that I think makes this ensemble so great is the chemistry you all share. You guys have been kind of doing this kind of, the little laugh, the
yes, where did that come from? You were doing it yesterday during the giveaway with the
audience.
In season one or season two, we did these little special scenes that were like webisodes, and I think they're on the DVD as well.
They're on the DVD.
And in one of them, Ricky is talking to Chance and Noah about his relationship with Janito, and Ricky is a top, and Janito wants to be a top with Ricky. And Ricky's expressing his reluctance to do that, and so they're talking about it and trying to comfort him and advise him to be comfortable with it, and they're making all these double entendres, and then they do the little
yeah, Ricky says something like, it'd be like sticking a hot poker in my eye, and then Chan says, good analogy.
Okay,
well, I don't know how much more time we have, but I do have to ask you, Noah's Ark has been compared to Sex and the City. How do you feel about that? And do you really see parallels between the two?
Well, I think, you know, there's always a desire, especially when media is concerned, to kind of put something in, find a box for something,
mm-hmm.
you know, a way to encapsulate it, you know, to describe it in a word, you know,
mm-hmm.
in a phrase. And so it's easy to say, ooh, gay black Sex and the City, because you kind of know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, that television sort of archetype is nothing new. We've seen Golden Girls and seen Friends, we've seen Sex and the City, Designing Women, etc. So it's just an opportunity, a way to have different kinds of characters in a group setting. I don't mind it because I love Sex and the City. I'm definitely, this show was influenced by Sex and the City heavily, the Golden Girls heavily. It's a great show, and there are some similarities. I mean, you know, Sex and the City was a show where before that you didn't have women talking about a lot of those issues that they're talking about, a lot of those sexual issues and relationship issues in the way that those women talked about them. And then after that, you know, it opened up a whole field of discussion. Suddenly, you know, Oprah was talking about orgasms and sex and things like this. And we do the same thing. It was important for me with this show to explore issues that are specifically relevant to and unique to the gay community, issues about sexual compatibility that are specific to these characters, the differences between, you know, being a top and being a bottom, and those issues that, you know, sexual compatibility is not anything special to us, but we do have, there are things that are special about this community that are interesting to portray, and I think in that way, I don't mind the comparisons. So
one of the things that should be noted, that there is a large, a pretty substantial following of straight women and allies who really tune into the show. Jensen, what is the kind of feedback you receive from that segment of the audience?
It sounds like this.
I mean, it's really, it's been awesome. I mean, it's, from the beginning, you know, obviously Noah's Ark is geared a certain demographic, and that's at the beginning, that's the type of emails that we would get. Now, you know, 5 years later, I get emails from everyone that you can, white Midwest housewives, straight Asian guys in the military, gay Latin guys in the military. I mean, any way you could possibly make the equation, we're getting emails from, or the fans of the show are growing, are still growing.
Yeah, we get everything from, you know, the 19-year-old who says, I was able to come out and accept my sexuality by seeing your show, or the, you know, 40-year-old mother who says, you know, I suspected my son was gay, and I was able to ask him and talk to him about it after seeing your show, to the, you know, the thug from South Central who says, you know, my grandmother's watching your show now.
50-year-old white male from Santa Barbara who identifies with Wade, and obviously, you know, as an audience, you take what you want to from what you, who identifies with Wade as a bisexual man. So it's just across the board.
Well, that concludes this portion of the interview. We thank you so much. Did you have another question, Dion, before we left?
No, but I would just like to say
thank you. We hope everybody comes and checks out the movie October 24th. If you're not familiar with the series, before the movie, get the DVDs, download it on iTunes, and check it out. Have a bunch of friends over. It's great fun. The soundtrack will be out in October as well on Tommy Boy Records. And we thank everybody for their support.
As we keep things moving, Logo has a lot cooking. And in addition to the movie coming out, Noah's Ark, the movie Jumping the Broom, that's out this Friday, they've this year launched a new reality show series that looks at gay athletes. In the series Shirts and Skins, the reality show focuses on the California team, the Rock Dogs basketball team, and looks at all of the drama that goes into maintaining a title in this world of macho sports from a gay perspective. And joining us is a actor in the series. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Is this DeMarco or Rory?
This is Rory.
Rory, glad you could join us. Where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from New York.
Way to go.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, no problem. I want to get right into it. You know, we see that there are images broadening of what we look at in terms of gay characters. And what makes this series on Logo so interesting is that it's dealing with sports. And many times this is looked at as, you know, it's not a very feminine kind of genre. And yeah. What does it feel like to be helping broaden the scope of gay male images?
I mean, this experience has been surreal almost. It's the first time that anyone like us has ever been given a voice like this. And just to be able to have the experience and see it out there and to get the responses from people that we've been getting, it's been amazing. People really seem to have connected with, you know, our experiences and have helped identify a lot with us.
And so give us a feel for your kind of what you add to this show, because I know that this series has a lot of interesting characters, and some are good, some are bad, and then some you just love to hate.
Yeah, you know, the team is definitely made up of a lot of different kinds of personalities, a lot of individuals, different places in life, all kinds of things. I've been on the team about 8 years, and I play a role kind of... the responsible role, I guess. That's kind of how I was.
The voice of reason.
Yeah, exactly. anything kind of needs to get done, planning, or you know, one of the episodes dealt with a fundraiser, and I did a lot of the work to set up the fundraiser. So.
And so the series is pretty much finished. I know you can't give away too much, but where are we at right now in terms of audiences who may not be familiar with the series?
Yeah, sure. The fifth episode aired last night, Monday at 10 o'clock, and we've got one more episode to go, which is gonna show next Monday at 10 o'clock on Logo.
And how did you get involved on the team? You said you've been on the team for a number of years, because what many people may not realize is this is an actual sports team.
Yeah, absolutely. We a lot of the bigger cities in America have gay basketball leagues. And then what they do is they take their better players and they send them to a national level organization. And we have tournaments throughout the year. You know, actually we have one this weekend in Washington, D.C. You know, through the years, the team has changed a lot. A couple of us, DeMarco, myself, Jay, Francis, Alex, have been on it quite a while.
Now, with it, you know, you're being exposed to a much wider audience. Are you getting that kind of sex symbol kind of response from people?
A couple of us have. I definitely have a little bit, I think, because my top is off a lot of the show. we didn't wear a lot of clothes. It was warm, and we practiced a lot, and they had to take our shirts off. So,
what have you enjoyed most about being a part of this?
You know, honestly, the experience. This is, like I said, the first time that any of us have ever been given this kind of voice, and being able to share that experience with my teammates that are like my brothers. Like I said, I've been on the team 8 years, and a couple of us, we've grown up together, and just to be able to share the experience with them has been just absolutely amazing.
Well, I tell you, we definitely will be watching. What have you enjoyed the least about doing this and being kind of on a national stage?
The hardest part, I think, has been, you know, all of us go into this experience thinking that everything we say is going to be portrayed, you know, verbatim. Everything that we say is going to be actually how it happened, and, you know, the experience of having what you said edited and moved around and spliced to create situations has been eye-opening for all of us. We had to definitely check our egos at the door a little bit because...
I heard that.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely thank you for calling in, and if more people want more information, they can just go to logo.com.
Logoonline.com
and yep. Learn more about shirts and skins.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rory.
Take care. Have a great night.
In our community spotlight, where we highlight some of the different things going on in your neck of the woods, we want to let you know that this Saturday, the Peace Out Speak Out event will be going on October 25th from 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. at Unity Fellowship Church of Atlanta, 471 Nelson Street, Southwest. The Peace Revolution seeks to raise awareness about the effects of violence against women and children, and our own Betty Couvetier will be one of the panelists, along with myself.
And Dion Bates.
Mm-hmm. Also on Saturday, the Green Leaf and Tea Company Cafe is having an open mic poetry and spoken word event over on 2730 Peachtree Industrial Boulevard. For more information on that, you can go to greenleafandteaco.com and get more information. And as always, beat the lines. If you want your voice to be heard, you can vote right now here in the Greater Atlanta Metropolitan Area. Different polling places include here in the city, 141 Pryor Street. That's in the Justice Center downtown. You can also vote in Sandy Springs at 7741 Roswell Road. And in College Park at 5600 Stonewall Tell Road. And be sure to party with a purpose and support the Toys for Tots efforts during the Black Party going on Sunday, November 2nd. For more information on that, call 404-409-5559. That's 404-409-5559. And that wraps up our community spotlight.
All righty. And on the phone, we have staying right along with our movie night, let's say. Okay, we have the producer of Breakfast with Scott, Lori Lind. Hi, good evening. How are you?
Hi, Betty. Actually, you've got the director of Breakfast with Scott.
Oh, director. I'm so sorry. Director.
No worries. I wish I produced it as well, but I just directed it. So.
All righty. Okay. Tell us. I watched the screener that was sent to me. I thought it was a very exciting movie. It's great. In our times now, showing the family thing and
great.
raising children and the relationships. And this evening we have, concentrated tonight in the program, men in sports. Okay,
oh,
now men raising families.
Yep.
And the images portrayed on the screen and on the big screen as well as a small screen. So it's all about men and what's it take to be a man. Okay.
And, very good.
Yes. And so, what has it been like for your experience in putting this film together, Breakfast with Scott?
Well, Breakfast with Scott is the story of a very, quote, straight gay couple, a lawyer and an ex-hockey player who's now a sportscaster, who gets stuck with an 11-year-old boy who is a total sissy. And so it's a gay family comedy about how these guys are kind of threatened by this sissy kid and how they, you know, in a way try and straighten him out. And my experience of it has been really positive just because it seems to speak to, you know, the heart of a lot of gay people in terms of internalized homophobia, and yet treating that subject in a really light, comic way. And it's been very interesting in terms of how it sparked discussions about gays in sports, and just the whole idea of the gay family. But it's kind of a charming, misfit, fish-out-of-water kind of story.
Mm-hmm. You know, what always amazes me is that many times, like you talked about, this internalized homophobia that goes on within the gay community.
Yes.
I always want to say that if it was not for the femme queen, we wouldn't be able to do anything in terms of going to work, in terms of being able to get married, in terms of a lot of things going on. What's up with that?
I agree. Well, that's actually one of the things I love about this movie, because I think in a way it's a celebration of the sissy, because it's like these uptight sort of straight acting guys who recognize that this sissy kid is more comfortable in his own skin than they are, you know? And that's one of the things I'm proudest about the film.
Okay. Laurie, I want to take a second to introduce you to Reed Vandenberg. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Reed Vandenberg is our contributing psychologist from Oregon.
Oh, interesting. Hi, Reed.
And he calls every month, and I thought it would be interesting to have him. Tonight is Tea Talk Tuesday. We normally discuss transgender issues and anything relating to it. And I thought it would be interesting to have Reed join us in this conversation as we discuss these different aspects of men, you know.
Very good.
Reed is he is the author of Transition and Beyond. Am I correct, Reed?
Yes.
Okay, and he is female to male, and he's he's always contributed some interesting conversation on this program. So as we continue the conversation. Reed, just join in wherever you feel you can or want to, okay?
Well, one thing that strikes me is that when kids are little, like 7, 6, 7, 8 years old, sometimes they have a real strong sense of being different.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Sometimes those kids grow up to be gay, sometimes they grow up to be lesbian, and sometimes they grow up to be transgender.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're little kids, that feeling of being different in the realm of gender and gender roles, that all some of it feels a bit foreign or not quite right or something's not quite in sync with the other kids. It's a really common feeling, I think, that affects all of us when we're young.
And Laurie, how does your character, you said it's kind of like a fish out of water, how does your main character or the protagonist deal with being different?
Well, Scott, it's interesting because it's, the movie at its core is Eric's story, which is the character played by Tom Cavanagh, who's the sportscaster, former NHL hockey player. And he's the one who's sort of, he's out to his family and friends and sort of in the neighborhood, but he is not out at work. And the character Scott, who's the young boy who, through sort of a complicated reason, ends up in their home, he's 11 and he's completely himself. His mother's died, this kid is an orphan, and his mother actually died of a drug overdose. And this is all fictional, of course. This is all the story. But the character of Scott, and I'm always quick to say that she may have been a junkie, but she was a great mom, because this little boy at 11 is very comfortable in his own skin, more so than this 40-year-old man. So that's kind of the struggle of the film,
mm-hmm.
this guy who's older. And again, that's what I find interesting as a gay man in my late 40s. I do think I do think of coming out as a lifelong process, and I do think mm-hmm. that, whatever our version of that is, we always bump up against these little obstacles we put up for ourselves, you know.
Can you describe, this is, of course, your work and your passion. One of the great things about art, in particular films, is that it kind of is a wonderful icebreaker to have kind of tough family talks. I know, Reed, and you deal with this when you're counseling your patients, one of the things that people always kind of struggle with is at what point to talk to their parents about certain issues or talk to people that they love. But, Laurie, can you speak to maybe any examples where your work has really touch people in a way that they're able to share how they've been able to maybe build bridges across their family relationships?
Well, I don't know specifically how it, but I would hope it would, and I feel really strongly about the power of film and television and all of the arts is to reach people and to educate. But I think you reach people more by entertaining, and that within that entertainment there are hopefully interesting politics and interesting points of view, which is how I like to think about Breakfast with Scott. That first and foremost, it's a really entertaining film, but it's you laugh, you cry, and hopefully you leave feeling good about it. But it is about very interesting politics. The thing that's struck me the most seeing this film at gay film festivals, because we've been lucky to be programmed at some really good ones, is how powerful it is for a gay person or a lesbian or transgendered to see a person of, you know, an authority figure, a parent figure, saying to an 11-year-old child, I will notice you. I love you for who you are. I'll notice you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, unfortunately, a lot of us, I'm very blessed. I grew up with parents who bought me a doll when I was 5. But that's not the norm. I know mm-hmm. that. And I think a lot of gay, lesbian, and transgendered folks grow up without that kind of positive parental recognition. And so I'm hoping this strikes a chord for people to see how important that is.
Well,
I agree. I agree, because one of the biggest issues that my clients face is this, I think you called it internalized homophobia earlier,
yeah.
but it also works with transgender people, this internalized sense of shame and guilt that
yes.
that they were not well served when they were children. And it's not that their parents were doing bad things. They thought they were doing the best thing for their kids. They just didn't understand what the best thing was.
Yeah. And I think it's just, I think that's what we, you know, we all want to be accepted and loved for who we are. And
mm-hmm.
how we're raised obviously has such an impact on how comfortable we are in our own skin. And I
deal with a number of parents who have children who are transgender and who may end up transitioning later in life and maybe not. But what I always tell the parents is, accept your child for who they are. You can't change who they are, but what you can affect is how well they accept themselves later in their lives.
Well, gentlemen, we're just going to transition into our commentary for just a minute. I want you all to stay on the line. We've got a commentary by our comedian, Brent Starr, where he's talking about suspects.
Okay, first of all, we are going to talk about suspects, but not in relation to your film. I do want to see that film. But this is suspects aimed at the straight arena, those entertainers who are straight. We are not saying they're gay, but they are suspects. First, we're going to start with Nelly, honey. Okay, did y'all see him in GQ magazine? He was posing wearing Sean John's underwear. Okay, now the fact that his name is Nelly, that's not enough to say he's a suspect. And the fact that his clothing line is called Apple Bottoms, because where I come from, bottoms means something totally different. But anyway, that don't mean he's a suspect. But the fact that you a grown man and you posing in Sean John's underwear all in his magazine, so, you know what? Next time he's seen, it's getting hot in here, take your clothes off. Whose clothes are you talking about?
Oh, God.
Yours or Sean John's underwear? Okay, now we're going to talk about Beyonce. Here again, ain't nobody said
not Beyonce.
Ain't nobody said she's gay. We ain't saying that. Okay, but how about she got this brand new song coming out called If I Were a Boy? And some of the lyrics are, if I was a boy, I would drink beer with the guys and chase after girls. I swear I'll be a better man. Now, here again, just because she got an all-girl band, that don't mean anything. And just because she gonna she'll be a better man, chase after women, that don't mean anything either. But I wonder, all this time when she was telling us, listen, was that what she was trying to say? You know what I'm saying? That's all I have to say. Tune in next week for our next suspect.
Oh, Brent, you're just too much. It's just too much.
All righty now. I add a little spice to the conversation there, okay? But I just wanted to say to you guys, you know, whatever, all this, you know, as far as your work, Glory, and producing a movie like this, the education that's involved in it, you know, and you know, the people who will come to see it that are other than, you know, gay folks. And you know, it's because tonight we've been, you know, talking about, you know, movies, and we also spoke about Noah's Ark sweeping. What is it? Sweeping the broom?
Jumping the broom.
Okay. Oh, you know, I have to momentary plug. I directed 2 episodes of Noah's Ark.
Did you really? We're having a full circle moment in our show. Everything
yes, we
is
are.
Connected.
Everything is connected.
I love that show. I love those people.
Well, we had the producer earlier.
Yeah, Patrick Ian Pope. And the main characters, Daryl Stevens and Jensen Atwood, joined us earlier.
It was done prior. Yeah, we had a recording of it. And,
okay, I'll say it on the air. I have a huge crush on Jensen.
Look, you and my sister and everyone else, I'm telling you, he's like the best, the new hot thing.
Well, my favorite direction in my life so far as a director practically was when I had a scene with Jensen, and it was he and Daryl, and they hadn't seen each other for a while in this scene, and I got to say to him, Jensen, just smolder a little more.
All right.
And he did.
So you can take the credit for his smoldering it.
I wish. Just in that one shot, that one episode. But that, I love those people, and I love that show, and I'm so excited to see that movie. So
that's wonderful. Well, you know, not to change the subject, but we also dealt with men in sports.
Right. We talked about the new logo series, Shirts and Skins, and we had the teammate Rory on to talk about that experience.
There's gonna be more suspects.
I think so.
Oh, Lord. So, Reed, I wanted to ask you, though, in terms of your practice and what you're seeing in your counseling, are people kind of excited or inspired by these new images in media that are going on? I mean, you deal with a transgender audience. I mean, when Felicity Huffman played in the Trans America.
Trans-America.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, one of the good things is, I mean, these images are being out there, and they're pretty mainstream images.
Absolutely. That film, and also a film called Normal with Jessica Lange.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 2003, and also Transgeneration in particular.
Right.
Those
right.
three are ones that I recommend all the time for people to watch or recommend for their families to watch, because I agree with what was said earlier about the power of film to really sway people's minds. People are so influenced by the tone and the way in which an image or a character is portrayed. And if it's portrayed negatively, that's what they walk away with. But if it's portrayed in a sympathetic light, that's what they walk away with.
Yeah, I think it's the most
There were
powerful.
Things about Normal and Transamerica that weren't really quite accurate, but it's Hollywood. It's 2 hours, and they did a very good job for what they tried to tackle in those two-hour films.
Yeah, Laura, you were going to say something?
No, I was just agreeing with Reed that it's the most powerful way to reach people because, you know, that sort of constitutes what normal is. Quote, what mm-hmm. normal is when we see images where characters
yeah.
behave as if this is normal, the way we all do about our peers and our families and our friends and such. And so I think it's really important for films and theater to embrace that more, to embrace our stories more honestly.
Yeah, and I think it's especially powerful when a mainstream actress like Jessica Lange or Felicity Huffman
yes.
takes on a role like that. Jessica Lange played the wife of a trans woman and ends up staying with her partner.
But Lori,
let's
talk, though, film business. Because is it still a battle to get these stories out there?
It depends. I mean, this is a Canadian film, and we, you know, it took quite a while to get it financed. Like, it always takes a long time to get any story financed. But I think it's interesting. I think there's a perception that there is a niche market for gay films. And this is one where, you know, I'm very much hoping it reaches its gay audience, but it also reaches beyond that, because I actually think it's the sort of film that could play in a multiplex. It's such a mainstream entertainment in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my honest answer as a gay filmmaker is that it's hard to get any film made.
Yeah, because I've heard that it's not even about the film being gay. Hollywood really doesn't care about that like people think they do. It's just
yeah.
about the money. If they can make some money, they'll do it. They'll do
yeah.
any film.
And so I'm sorry, I have to actually leave you guys because I'm embracing my gay cliche, and I'm off to see a production of Cabaret.
Oh, how exciting.
I'm calling you guys from Stratford, Ontario in Canada.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Really, thank you.
Totally my pleasure, and I'm sorry I have to leave early.
And Breakfast with Scott premieres, opens in the theaters on the 24th, right?
Yes.
Right.
And I hope lots and lots and lots and lots of people go and see it.
Yes, yes,
yes.
I hope so too, because it was a delight. I was privileged to get a screener, so I was able to get, you know, the gist of it all. And it's a delightful movie. It really is.
Well, thank you so much, you guys. I'm sorry I have to leave early, but I've really enjoyed speaking with you all.
Okay,
I look
thank
forward
you.
To seeing the film.
Okay.
Me too.
All right. Thank you
Take
again,
care.
Laurie. Thank you. Have fun tonight.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Hi, Reed.
Hey, buddy.
We get Reed all to ourselves now.
Yes, now we have Reed all to ourselves. How are you tonight?
I'm doing quite well.
Good, good. I hope that you didn't mind that throw in there. I just thought that because the evening was so into the movies and movie going and our stories, you know, it would be great to get your perspective on it from the critical side.
I do look forward to seeing the movie. I go to all movies like that. Positive portrayal.
Yeah, delightful. You know, like I said, they sent me the screener and I watched it and I enjoyed it tremendously. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it opens up on Friday, 24th, right?
That's right. You're right.
Yep. And along with Noah's
Ark, Jumping the Broom,
also opens up on the 24th. Both of them. So that's exciting. It's great that we have so much media out there about us in one way or another, whether it's on the big screen or the small screen, and It tells our stories and it tells how human we are, you know.
I'm also noticing in recent months the number of articles that have been written about children transitioning.
Yes.
And most of them are really very positive and mm-hmm. quite well done. They've done their research, they've done their homework, they're mm-hmm. talking to a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like I get a forward of one a week now.
Really? So
one was in Atlantic Monthly. It was a very good article. I really appreciated it. And it seems to be having a snowball effect. Some of the clinics that deal with children
mm-hmm.
who have gender issues have noticed that they have a fourfold increase in the numbers of parents that are bringing their kids in. Unfortunately, some of those parents are looking for a cure. They're trying to figure out, okay, how do we stop this? But many parents are now realizing, well, we don't think we can stop this.
Right.
We realize this is the way our child is. What do we do now?
Right.
And that's
right.
a very different question from trying to change the child.
Right, to change the child. Yeah. Yeah, but that's a good thing that children, you know, they're recognizing at a younger age, you know.
Definitely.
I assume, you know, we'll sort of kind of avoid a lot of distress later on.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And for some of those kids, they will grow up to be gay or lesbian, or they may just be kids for whom it is not exactly a phase, but their gender expression just isn't what their parents would think is normal for a girl or a boy, mm-hmm. but they may still grow up to be quite happy as men or as women, and they may be straight, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But like I said earlier, the main thing is not to instill any shame in the child,
right.
because then they have a much more difficult time accepting whoever they turn out to be later in life.
Right. Not to change the subject, but we are in the political part of our existence here.
Yes, I got my ballot in the mail yesterday.
You got your ballot in the mail. We do.
Mm-hmm. No. All of our balloting here, all of our voting here is done by mail.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Oregon hasn't had polling stations in several years now.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Which is great. We have much higher voter turnout rate as a result because the weather's bad and no one has to leave their home.
Right, nobody has to leave home, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it certainly makes it real, though, when your ballot arrives in the mailbox.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes.
That's pretty
cool. So they arrived yesterday.
So there's been a lot of excitement out there. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah.
And how about and the California?
A lot of the people are talking now about Obama being endorsed by Colin Powell. How exciting that is.
Right. And how about the, what's it, the Proposition 8 in California?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of excitement about that here, being right next door to California. In fact, Basic Rights Oregon did a phone bank
mm-hmm.
to voters in California,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
encouraging them to vote the right way on that ballot measure.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how it looks out there for that?
It's really hard to tell because mm-hmm. there's a lot of speculation that people won't admit to the pollsters how they really intend to vote because they don't want to be seen as bigoted. It seems like it's going to be defeated. I mean, it seems like the amendment to try to make it illegal to marry as a gay or lesbian
will
be defeated.
So it'll stay legal to get married in California, hopefully.
Exactly. So, exactly. Mm-hmm. But who knows whether that's really the case. And it may be that it's too close to call. I'm not really calling it one way or another.
One way or the other,
really not convinced that people always tell the truth about that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. It was several months back, I remember reading stuff that the percentage in California for gay marriage was greater than the ones against.
Yeah. That's what the polls are saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just don't always entrust them on things like this.
So hopefully, it'll remain illegal for the GLBT to get married in California, and
yes.
so
yes.
it will remain the same in other states that is, you know, they're legal, Massachusetts, Connecticut now, and New mm-hmm. York accepting the marriages in other states.
Well, and here in Oregon, we have civil unions, and what's happened here is that the anti-gay forces here were not able to get enough signatures to get something on the ballot to overturn that.
Oh, okay.
Because, well, here in Oregon, people have the attitude, if something isn't causing a major problem, why change it?
Why change it, right.
Mm-hmm. So because it isn't causing any major problems, I don't think there was any way that they could pass that ballot measure, but even still, they couldn't even get it on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as these things become the norm and people get used to it and realize the sky hasn't fallen and the world hasn't come to an end, mm-hmm. they'll be much less inclined to discriminate.
Mm-hmm. All right. As always, you know, we're getting close to the 8 o'clock hour here. We got about 5 minutes left. What mm-hmm. else? How's your book going, coming along? And do you have any other projects?
The first printing is sold out on my book, and now I'm starting another book.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to write some of the stories of children who have transitioned socially in elementary school.
Oh, interesting.
Because a lot of my older clients, they hear about things like this, and they'll say things like, oh, my God, if I could have transitioned when I was that age.
Mm-hmm.
And the implication is they wouldn't have had any problems, when, in fact, they would have just avoided some of the problems that they do have.
Mm-hmm.
They might not have been married for 25 years, and that's a double-edged sword because they love their wives and they don't necessarily want to get a divorce. But
mm-hmm.
on the other hand, they do wish that they could have avoided some of the pain of their life. But it's not easy to transition young. Just because it avoids some problems, there are still problems. It's still not easy. So
right.
I want to write about that, what that process is like for whole families.
Because
that's where it's really different from transitioning as an adult, because it involves your parents, your siblings, your grandparents. You're still very much embedded in your family of origin when you're 7, 8 years old. So the whole family has to transition.
As you're telling stories and you're writing about the experience of transgender people, when you look at the headlines and any recent news coverage, were there any positive stories that really struck out to you?
Well, yeah. The story I read recently in the Atlantic Monthly that I referenced earlier,
mm-hmm.
that of a family living somewhere in the deep south, and they described their town as a no-stoplight town. And they had never heard of transgender anything. They didn't even know it existed,
wow.
these parents.
Wow.
And they took their kid to therapist after therapist because this is the child who wanted to wear dresses from the pre-verbal age, pretty much. And they thought there was something really wrong, and some of the therapists were telling them, oh, well, it's because the father, the biological father, was not a good father.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, this is a child who bonded too much with mom before she married the child's stepfather.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to put it back on the family. But then the parents eventually realized, oh, there's other kids like this. And now this child is transitioning socially in an elementary school somewhere in the deep south in a little tiny town. And I find that really encouraging. If it can happen in a place like that, it can happen anywhere.
Anywhere, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Reed, I want to thank you again for joining us.
Absolutely.
And contributing and giving us such great information. And we'll see you next month again.
Yeah, we'll talk next month.
Okay. Again, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. And that was Reed Vandenberg from Portland, Oregon, who is our contributing psychologist, to give us his clinical impressions and perspectives. Okay, and we have about a minute or so left. You want to give information on the Saturday thing again, where it is?
It's October 25th, this Saturday, at Unity Fellowship Church, which is on Nelson Street.
And this Friday, the Noah's Ark film opens?
Noah's Ark film mm-hmm. opens. It's going to be playing at Midtown Art Cinema, right there on 931 Monroe Street.
All right.
Oh, I can't wait to go see that.
All righty. Exciting, exciting.
Jumping the broom.
A lot of exciting things going on. And so.
And remember, early voting.
Early voting.
Let your voice be heard. If you don't want to stand in a lot of long lines come election day, you can vote and just check with your local voting district about where you need to be.
Absolutely. All right. Okay. And with all that said, it's that time to say good night. I want to thank the production team, Andre, Brent, and Millicent. Thank you so much for being here. This is wonderful. Our team is growing, and thank you for your contribution tonight, Brent. That was cool.
Thank you. And I just want to say I'm Brent Starr, and I approve this message.
All right. See? Never know what's going to be said around here these days. Okay. And with that, I say good night and buenas noches.